This is Jane McGonigal, the author of Super Better and a big fan of the Psych Tech Podcast. You're listening to Psych Tech Podcast, where you will get the future of psychology and technology.
Welcome to Psych Tech, the Psychology and Technology Podcast. My name is Josue Cardona. Usually my co-host here is Kelly Dunlap, but today is March 8th, 2017. It is the International Day of the Woman, and we are doing something called A Day Without a Woman. So Kelly has a day off. And instead of Kelly, I have Dr. Tom Guariello from RoboPsych. He's been on the show before. My good friend Tom, how are you?
I'm well, Josue. How are you?
I'm good, and I'm excited.
In your day without a woman, that sounds scary to me.
It is kind of scary. I think that's the point.
yes, just a little reminder.
Yeah,
a little reminder. Yes.
So thank you for stepping in.
Sure enough, happy to do so.
And I'm excited that you're here because we're actually. Right in the middle of a series of podcast episodes on your show, RoboPsych. We're going through the new season of the TV show Humans, which is on AMC in the United States, Channel 4 in the UK, and it is a wonderful show. And we're doing some deep dives on RoboPsych. But here I wanted to take some time to just kind of go over the show, geek out about it a little, and kind of talk robots with you. It's always fun to talk robots with you.
Yeah, I'm always ready to talk robots.
So RoboPsych is all about human-robot interaction, and this show is full of that. How much do you like humans, or what are your general thoughts about the show?
Well, I think it's a great, science fiction is always an access to our thoughts and feelings and fears often about the future. And, you know, here we have a fictional depiction of a time in the near future when robots are synths, as they call them on humans, are just a normal everyday part of life, except that when they attain consciousness, everything changes. So I think what the show has done is to demonstrate the kinds of issues that are going to come up both in the normal synth usage, just the everyday kind of synth usage, and things like how do you treat synths? What's the etiquette for treating regular synths? And then, of course, once we have these conscious synths, then everything changes, which is what we're seeing happening in humans.
You know, this show was born out of sci-fi because I agree with you. Like, sci-fi allows us to talk about so many things, right? And it allows us to see a glimpse of a possible future, something that maybe we weren't able to imagine. And what I really like about this show is that, like you said, it's near future, so it's not like Battlestar Galactica, right? Where it's hard right. to, I mean, right. it's a relatable show in many ways, but that's not our world, you know, it's so far flung into the future. And this looks like our world, and it's believable. And we can see so many things that look like what we're going through right now, even if we don't have human looking robots walking around. And maybe my favorite part of the show is that not only like we're put into this world right when, you know, synths are becoming or conscious synths are becoming visible in the world and people are becoming aware of them.
Yeah.
But also we get this look into just what the world is like with these robots already there. You know, we've talked on your show about how we don't know how long ago it happened, and we don't right. know when that when people got comfortable with them, you know. I love that, you know, I forgot what season it is, but you see a synth handing out flyers in a plaza. You see them as waiters, you know, you see them in all of these just situations that you know that people are seeing them on a daily basis, and no one's batting an eye. They're so comfortable with it. And I love seeing that, because I don't remember a show that really showed both sides of that.
Yeah, the mundane world that we're introduced into in season one is the world in which there are ubiquitous synths, and they have already been integrated into functional worlds, because, as we know, Joe Hawkins goes and buys Anita Mia, or rents her, or whatever, however he acquires her, whatever the financial transaction was.
Oh, on a day when his wife wasn't at home.
Absolutely. It was one of those spur-of-the-moment kind of, I can't handle being the house husband anymore. Let's talk about a day without women.
Yeah.
He ran out and immediately had to buy an artificial woman, a synth woman, in order to fill in for his wife, Laura, who was away.
Oh, yeah, that's so funny. I forgot that. Oh, that's so perfect. Yeah.
Yeah, so having a store that you could go to buy a synth, is that, I don't know, 10 years away in our world? Maybe.
Do you think the technology, like, do you think when we start, because we can buy robots for the home, right? There are things that we can buy, you know, ranging from something like an Alexa that costs $50 all the way up to what are some of the commercially available robots right now that are actually available that you could buy right now?
Well, two are the Nao, that's spelled NAO, mm-hmm. Which is a small robot about, 2 feet tall, maybe a little more. And that's fully programmable and has both Bluetooth and Wi-Fi capability and has some facial recognition capability. And that's about, right now, it's about $9,000. And even more ambitious is Pepper, Pepper's about 4 feet tall and is very popular in Japan. In Japan, they release Peppers in tranches of 1,000 and sell out those 1,000 units in literally a minute. And I think Pepper goes for around $20,000 plus a healthy monthly subscription fee for maintenance and software updates. So, you know, they're still pretty expensive, which we know is going to, you know, that'll change pretty dramatically in the near future. So, you know, I think that within 10 years, we will have lots and lots of robots, very specialty functioning kinds of robots. Not, you know, I think most of us, when we think about robots, we often think about, you know, that full human emulation level of synth, like we see in conscious robots on humans. But what's much more realistic in the near future for us are very specialized kinds of robots that will be narrow artificial intelligence, not general artificial intelligence.
Like yesterday we saw the burger flipping robot.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Which, like, we can see through its eyes. We see what, like, it is very focused on knowing if a hamburger is done or not, if it's got cheese, where the bread is. It can put it together, and that's what it's designed for. And right, it doesn't look like a person. It looks like an arm designed to flip hamburgers.
Right. Right. And we see robots like Baxter and Sawyer, you know, from Rethink Robotics, that are production line quality robots that can be trained by a user by moving the robot's arm in to perform the activity you want it to perform, like, for example, pick and pack in a warehouse, you know, picking up something, putting it in a box, you know, like a box of wine glasses, for example, you know. There are now assembly line, not assembly lines, but are packaging lines that are using those kinds of robots to do real work, but they're narrow functioning. You know, they're not that kind of general purpose, you know, flexible conversational kinds of robots or flexible activity kinds of robots that we see like on humans.
You know, one of the things that right is so interesting about the show is the effect of having the robots look like humans. Because there's practically, right, there's no – I mean, is there a practical reason for it? Because we know that the computers now – like Pepper looks – humanoid-ish, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Has a face, has features, but something like, again, like Alexa is a voice, right? And we have so many different versions. Like, I always wonder what happened to, like, Chappie, right? Like, he looks like a robot. Johnny Five, right, from Short Circuit. Like, that looks like a robot. I want a robot that looks like Johnny Five before I want one that looks like Mia from Humans. Just because, like, I think that comes first, but I wonder, what do you think it's going to be like, or where do you, what do you think we're moving toward?
Well, I think it's going to be an interesting landscape, robotic landscape, because I think what we're going to see is a wide range of appearances and functionality, and so I've been I'm working on a book, and in the book looking at what I'm thinking of as the taxonomy of robots, and that taxonomy goes all the way from the, you know, the Echo to you know, some of the very humanoid looking sex robot dolls that we're starting to see now. So, you know, there is a pretty wide range of physical contexts in which robots, in which artificial intelligence will be placed. And I think what we're going to see is designing robots' physical appearance in ways that will enable them to be most effective and efficient in their functions. So if you take a production robot like Baxter, for example, Baxter has arms that look like a robot, and it has a screen that has eyes on it, like an iPad, sort of a screen for a face. And the choice to include that kind of a face, I think, was a way to enable interaction between the Baxter unit and the human, so that when the human sees the eyes of the Baxter robot following his or her hand as they're moving to teach it how to behave, that's a signal to us that, oh, it's paying attention. It sees what we're doing. So, you know, we're reassured that it's actually working. In other kinds of robots, we don't need that feedback. We don't need to know too much. We just need to, you know, be able to see it doing its job. And on the other end of the spectrum, if we have a caregiver robot in a health care situation, we may want some humanoid kinds of features that enable interaction with the person who's receiving care, because that may make the care more acceptable to the person and make the interaction feel more genuine than if we didn't have those. So designers are going to have real opportunities to tailor the look and every other, not just the look, but every characteristic of the robot's physical presence to the job to be done by the robot.
You know, something you said made me think about how some of these robots, we kind of just want them out of the way, right?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking like a Roomba, right? Which is, right, very simple device for cleaning. It'll do it sometimes, you know, hopefully when you're not there, so you never see it happening. And I feel like the idea, or the way it looks on humans anyway, is that by having the robots look like people, it's almost as if the machines disappear. Like you don't see them there because the machines look like people. So it's almost like this is all invisible, In a way, right. I don't know if that's something that we would like. I don't know if I would rather like. I really like the idea of a self-driving car that is retrofitted, right? So instead of the brand new Tesla, I'm got my old Corolla and I'm retrofitting it with something that'll make it drive for me. And would I rather have this big device with, you know, six arms and all over the place, or would I rather have something that looks like a person? And a chauffeur, you know, like a driver.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see. Like you said, like people are going to design all across the board, and we'll see what people prefer.
Yeah.
I don't know what I would prefer in a lot of these cases. I like to think that I don't want all of my machines anthropomorphized, right? I don't want them looking like people and necessarily smiling back at me. But in some cases, yeah. I would. I don't know.
Well, I think the being faced with those kinds of possibilities, and we'll see what it's like to interact with a robot that is not highly android, not highly humanized, doesn't lend itself to lots of anthropomorphisms, because there are going to be times when that's all we want. And yet there are going to be other times when we do want to interact with something that feels a little more like a person. And I think some of the work to be done will be on exploring what the experiences are like when the robots are embodied in different ways. And, you know, like any other product development decision, that's going to be a function of, you know, good design and trial and error. We'll see what a lot of these things are like. It may very well be that, you know, we have, of course, now the uncanny valley phenomenon that is becoming pretty widely understood. And you know, the uncanny valley may very well be a function of our level of technological sophistication at the moment. We only have the ability to create robots that are, for example, not very good at emulating subtle human expressions, the kinds of human expressions that trigger us right away to know, oh, this is a real person, or, oh, no, this is a robot. As we get more technologically sophisticated, that uncanny valley phenomenon may very well disappear as we get better at being able to make robots that can emulate human expressions much more realistically.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be the key moving forward, because, you know, the uncanny valley being that, you know that something's not real. Like, it's almost there, but you know that it's not, right? That weird feeling. It's what bothered me about the end of Star Wars Rogue One. I was like, oh, but I know, like, or throughout, you know, like, I know that's not a real person. It looks almost real. It looks pretty good, but it's not real. And it just bothered me. And that transition is going to happen slowly in different ways, right? So we'll see it in text, right? You won't know if you're chatting with someone who's real or if it's a bot. And I think we're pretty close to that, you know? And then we'll slowly move, like, voice is getting really good. Voice it surprises me still how good that is. And I think maybe we'll move into kind of avatar video-ish type of things, where there is a representation there using the voice, using, you know, it's understanding you, it's responding in a way that looks more real, but you know it's not a real person, but it could maybe fool you depending on exactly what it looks like. And then, but to get that into a physical form is obviously like the next step. I mean, the final step, I think, to really overcome. But I think we're doing really well on the first few.
Well, I think, you know, we haven't yet seen a robot that or any AI system that credibly passes the Turing test that would be impossible to distinguish from an actual human. We've gotten close on a couple of occasions, and there was that, you know, one trick that we saw a couple of years ago now where, oh, it sort of looked like this was passing the Turing test, but it's sort of gimmicky. And, you know, I think, as you say, voice, specialized function AI equipped systems are going to get very good at that function. And so, you know, I think we will have, let's say, you know, first level customer service interactions that are likely to be performed by some AI system and to be perfectly acceptable to us, even if we know that what we are interacting with is not a real human, it's good enough to be able to get the job done, and we won't really be distressed by the fact that it's not a real human. It'd be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Microsoft did all those tests with the WeChat bots, and some people didn't realize they were speaking to a bot for almost 20 minutes. You know, that's more than enough time to get a customer service issue resolved. And that's what we're seeing. And I question that all the time now. I'm like, wait a minute, is this? Oh, there's also a combination. Sometimes it just starts and it's a bot and then someone comes in. Like, those things are happening right now. And again, if you're not seeing a face, there's no physical representation. It's easier to overcome. Or maybe it's not so much like the general idea of the Uncanny Valley, but like you said, just getting the job done. It doesn't matter.
I think those are going to, we're going to become much more comfortable with those situations where, okay, yeah, this is a bot. That's fine. I'm engaging in something that is bottable. You know, it's okay for this to be a bot. And in other times, we don't want it to be bottable. We're going to want that additional flexibility and spontaneity and sense of understanding and empathy, not in a sappy way, but kind of like, oh, yeah, I get you. Your package isn't there. Okay, get it. You know, some expression that in an offhanded sort of way acknowledges appreciation of the experience we're having that is very difficult to automate and to put into an algorithm right now. So those handoffs between the bots and the people is where the opportunity is really going to lie, the way I see things. That the integration of robots into our lives means that we're going to have to figure out how to use these tools most effectively. And the people who are good at that are going to be, like any other technological skill, are going to be in demand. And so, you know, that's what I'm interested in, is looking at, okay, how do we help people to augment themselves with this technology the same way we've augmented ourselves with computers and smartphones, for example.
Yeah. One of the interesting ideas in humans is that essentially a synth is, like, right now we use a PC for everything, or we use our phone for everything. A synth can play that role. You get the impression that you could repurpose a synth to do a different job just because they can do all these other things. And I think that makes a lot of sense, that we would have robots that are multi-purpose, right? That are eventually, right? We're going to move towards that. We're going from specialized so they can do all these things. And I've thought about how making them look like humans makes sense as a first step, because we know how humans move and work. Like you said, like you're talking about Baxter, right? You can train it to do something like we do it because we know how we do it. And so that makes a lot of sense to me. I think the technology is really, really far away. But do you see anybody, or are there people talking about that type of thing, of having just universal appliances or robots, if you will?
Well, I think the idea of pursuing a general purpose intelligence, or, you know, general intelligence AI, which means artificial intelligence that is essentially undetectable as not human. So it's something that can do the same kinds of intellectual operations as humans can. That's obviously still very far away. We have no artificial general intelligence devices at the moment. if we were to have artificial general intelligence systems, and if they were to closely resemble humans, I think we've put ourselves in a very difficult spot, because that's when the replacement of humans by AI robots becomes more possible. And
you can do it at scale at that point. Yeah,
exactly. And I don't know how far away we are from that. I think we are far away from that. And I think that it's going to be a good thing for us to go with the specialized kinds of systems, so that we become comfortable with robots. Now, I think we're going to have, you know, we're going to have to face some ethical kinds of questions about the degree of emulation that is acceptable to us. I don't know if we're going to be comfortable with mass-produced general intelligence humanoid to a degree that can't be detected robots. I think that's going to freak people out pretty significantly, which I think we're seeing in humans too, that the transition from being just regular synths to conscious synths is not a development that the powers that be seem all that eager to pop to let people know about.
You know, in video games right now, there are a lot of games that look like games from the 80s and 90s. So 8-bit games, things like that. And some of them have been programmed in such a way that they slow down in certain parts. Uh-huh. But they do that just so that they feel like games from the 80s and 90s that had memory limitations. And, you know, so again, you're talking about comfort, and in humans, they give them all these green eyes so that you know that they're not people, even though they can't really act like them. So that's something that I think a lot about. I don't know how comfortable are people going to be with robots that, again, either look like machines or look like an appliance or look like – Pepper is cute, but it's also kind of weird. Like, I'm surprised no one has done a horror film yet, right?
Yeah.
With something like Pepper, like Child's Play was with a doll, right?
Like Chucky.
Yeah. Like, to me, Pepper's a little scary. It's a little off-putting, but that's me. Even though I recognize that it looks kind of cute.
Yeah, I think that's your experience is I'm sure not unique.
Yeah.
There are going to be people for whom Pepper is going to be like clowns for some people.
Yeah. You
know, not going to be pleasant, going to haunt some nightmares. And I mean, that tells us that, you know, Freud originally was the one who wrote about the uncanny valley. He didn't call it a valley. He just called it the uncanny in an article he wrote in 1919 or something. And what he was talking about was that sense of uneasiness that we get when we see a corpse, for example, and you know, the alive, not alive experience that we have. That's a body. That's a human. That's supposed to be a live body, but it's obviously not live. It's dead. And that uneasiness that we have then gets transferred to things like dolls or clowns that are made up. And so that's what Freud wrote about in his article. And you're describing, I think, what we're going to see, which is people being uncomfortable with the not quite humanness, and the closer they get, the more we're going to have to figure out how we're going to let people know, signal to people, this is not a human. Yeah. This is an artificially intelligent system. Somehow or other, you know, the green eyes in humans fulfills that function pretty well. What are we going to do in our world when we start having these kinds of systems around us? I don't know, but I think we're going to have to do something. I don't think people are going to be comfortable with the uncertainty of not knowing.
Yeah, like we're so far, right? We can't even create digital representations of humans that look convincing, right?
Yes.
Without very, very detailed animation like at a Pixar level. And that's impractical and very, very expensive. So yes. Something like in video games, again, or simulations, those the people, they don't move like people, you know, no matter how hard they try. And I remember my first so we're really far from that, right? Like it's going to be a slow transition. But there are those things like Pepper. The first time I remember experiencing this was the robot I've most wanted in my entire life was a Sony Aibo, which is a dog.
Sure.
And yes. The first and second versions, you remember, had the long face and looked like a robot. Then the third revision was like chubby and had eyes and a little nose. And oh, I hated it. I did not want that Aibo. I did not want that at all. They ruined robot dogs for me.
Yeah. Well, I think we're going to see experiments. We're going to see people making that full range of, verisimilitude. You know, how closely does this thing approximate the real thing, and how comfortable are we with them to do what? Like, in what situations are we comfortable? In what situations are we not comfortable?
Now, are people studying that right now?
You bet. Okay. Yeah. There's the people on the front line of this are designers. We have designers designing robot systems and designing in order to determine what kinds of features and characteristics, personality characteristics, as well as physical characteristics, are most will facilitate the kinds of behavior that you want the robot to engage in, and with humans, like how can we get great interaction between humans and robots in this sort of situation? Healthcare, workplace, home, entertainment, so on.
Yeah, there's so many degrees and so many levels to this. Like the Boston Dynamics dog, right? That kicking video, right? Where the reaction from many people was you felt bad for the machine, even though he looked like cables and wires and metal, and it was the way that it responded to being kicked. But what they still haven't. You know, they just released the one with the wheels that can jump and
pretty amazing video.
Yeah, right? Yeah. But those still look like robots. What, like they could, it's going to be so interesting once they start outfitting them with a visual representation, right?
If they start outfitting them with that kind of representation. I think, they're going to be very judicious in the way they shoot for the android resemblance robots. I think what they wanted there was to demonstrate that you've got a system here that's capable of doing all kinds of jobs for people, that carrying things and going and pursuing things and so on, that don't require humanoid features. You've got, wheels and arms and, not feet. And, it's kind of like the same principle that we used when we learned to fly. We originally wanted to emulate birds, right? Yeah. And then we said, oh no, you don't have to actually have wings that flap, and so we made planes. I think a similar thing is going to happen here, that the technologies are going to start off maybe being humanoid in appearance, but then it actually turns out to be better to not be humanoid.
Yeah.
For some of them.
Yeah. So in humans, we, over the course of the series, we're seeing that more, that there are consciousness, right? And there are more of them. And well, I'm really curious, like what happens if there's a deluxe model that has four arms instead of two, because it could do more work or it could be better. I don't know. And then what happens if one of those wakes up? I'm interested in that kind of thing, but I don't think we'll ever see something like that on the show. But I agree with you that it just doesn't make sense to only limit ourselves to what we know. And exactly, the bird plane example is perfect. I think we're going to see that more and more with us, right? Like even that burger flipping robot, like it can right. it can rotate in a way that a human hand cannot, right?
Yes, and it's better suited for the job
yeah.
than making believe that it has, you know, a human five-fingered hand that looks fleshy and so on. It, you know, that doesn't serve any functional purpose. It doesn't, and the emotional reaction that it would create is probably not a good one. So we're not trying, so you don't want to make believe that this disembodied hand is flipping the hamburgers. You want this automated device to get the job done and not freak people out. And the way, best way to do that is not to have the hand look human.
Yeah. So I'm curious what do you want to see? Like what kind of robots would you like to not only have but see day to day? Do you want them to look like what does your ideal future in terms of robots look like?
Well, I'd like to see a range, you know, like we're talking about, that go all the way from, you know, the Echo level, and you know, that are conversational assistants. I definitely want one of those yesterday. You know, when can I get a great conversational assistant that I can assign jobs to? You know, go out there and be sure that I'm getting all the latest research information about these areas and bring it back to me. Great. All, you know, like a very sophisticated Google alert system sort of thing. So I definitely want one of those. I also want a robot around the house that I can converse with and that I can partner with to do simple things, you know, help me carry the groceries in from the car, help me clean up this room, help me, you know, those kinds of tasks. I'd love to have a robot that would help with that. And, you know, I'm very interested in having robots that can serve as teachers. I think not just children, but using robots as a way to help people to learn all kinds of tasks and all kinds of domains, I think is a pretty wide open area, and certainly with kids. I mean, teaching kids how to do things and having a robot interact with them as a teacher, not judgmental, not making them feel stupid or guilty or, you know, whatever, that can help to do that, to help them learn, I think is great. And I think that's also applicable for adults. So I'd love to see some of those. So there's, you know, kind of three different kinds of robots that I'm very eager to find.
Yeah, I go back and forth on this, but I don't think that I want that universal robot that does everything. Mm-hmm. I really want more automation. I want to have that house that's completely automated so that I have, you know, I can go in and say, computer, do this, computer, do that. And kind of like things are done, or I can program it so things just get done. And kind of so like the whole house is alive and not the individual pieces. Just like if I go into my car, it's still my car. Because I feel like sometimes I want a vacuum, right? Like I can't vacuum with a Roomba necessarily, right? I wish I had an attachment where I could use it every now and then. Like I like that choice to be able to do or not do. And I mean, and that's kind of where we're moving, right? Everything is connected to the internet. Everything is smart, and everything is slowly automatable, right? And then you're picking your AI to kind of control all of those things. And I don't know. I feel, again, talking about comfort and what I feel comfortable with, I think that's what I feel most comfortable with. I don't know how I would feel about having just one device that, or one appliance that did everything. I love a smart kitchen, you know, things that self-clean, things that, that you know, a lot of arms and maybe things that, you know, like retract into a wall or something or come out, you know, that's kind of like invisible, gets the job done, stays out of my way. Like that's really the type of robotics that I want to see. And then, of course, like huge on the AI side. Like I'm with you on a lot of that AI stuff. I'm already comfortable with talking to my different AIs. I don't like having multiple AIs to talk to. I want a good one. Good one. I don't like. They're always disappointing me, Tom. They're always disappointing me.
So far, yes. So far, they are all a little disappointing, and that's
every day.
You know. Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's right that they are a little disappointing, and that's why I'm, you know, eager to get that great assistant that that doesn't disappoint.
Yeah, yeah. Oh man. Okay. Well, thank you for geeking out with me about robots and kind of just touching a little on again, like we were able to have a most of the ideas in this conversation come from seeing them in a show like Humans and seeing how they play out, how they make people feel. I think it's a great conversation starter for the things that are happening now. I think, you know, there isn't really any other show right now doing it like that. Like, there's so many robots there and you see them in so many different scenarios and contexts that it's fantastic. I think it's the show we need right now.
Yeah, if you compare Humans with Westworld, for example, where the setting in Westworld was highly fictionalized. It's a theme park, and you know you go to the theme park and you get to play these roles in the theme park, and that's, you know, interesting and certainly provocative, and the level of questions and issues that show raised were they were really provocative and interesting questions. Yeah. But I think that Humans locating their storytelling in the day-to-day world for people presents us with more kind of emotionally vivid situations for us to consider. And, you know, I think while the ethical questions that come from Westworld are interesting, they're different than the ethical questions that come from Humans. You know, for example, when we see a robot that has been used for target practice for darts, like we see in Humans, you know, we see that robot with that synth with three darts in her forehead, that produces an emotional moment for us that says, ooh, you know, wow, that's really bad. And when we heard Hester talking about, you know, how the humans would beat the synths with pipes and would throw acid on them and so on, this is the kind of ethical question that we're being presented with right now. And that's why, you know, government bodies and like the European Union and the UN are trying to figure out what are the ethical boundaries of these systems, and you know, are they more like animals than they are like people? And if they're like animals, don't they have the kind of rights that animals have? I mean, we're already into those levels of discussions. And I think Humans does a really good job of bringing those to the surface, which is why we've been spending as much time as we have talking about it.
Yeah. And that's why I'm so glad it's a series. It's not just a movie. You know, we see so many different things playing out, and we have normal, you know, a normal family with jobs and going to school and teenagers and kids, and we get to see it through their eyes. And it's great. I can't, you know, I'm enjoying the series so much right now.
Yeah, it's terrific, and it's, you know, it's fiction, so we know there's obviously there's all kinds of you know, fictional license being taken with things, but the kernel of the issues that are being portrayed, I think, are things that we're going to have to come to terms with relatively quickly.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So if somebody wants to follow our discussion of Humans or learn more about human-robot interaction from you, Dr. Tom Gauriello, where can they go?
Well, you can go to robopsych.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Tom Guariello. I know the spelling is tricky, but it's that. And also have a RoboPsych.com Twitter that you can follow. Well, that's where I'm spending my time online nowadays.
And a very good newsletter too.
Oh, thank you. Yes. As a matter of fact, today is newsletter day. So there'll be an issue coming out today.
Very cool. And for more psych tech, visit psychtechpodcast.com. We're at psychtechcast on Twitter. And I am at Josue A. Cardona. And you can follow Kelly at Kelly N. Dunlap and say hello to her. Thank you so much again for coming on the show.
Thank you, Josue.
Psych Tech will be back in 2 weeks.